So in the political resistance, what's been crowded off the headlines is that apparently our Senate on Monday night, toward late into the evening, had a vote on an $80 billion increase in the military budget to nearly $700 billion. Apparently it's gotten that high before. At the peak of the Afghan and Iraqi wars, it's gotten up that high before, so this is not like the first time it's been this obscene. But it does seem on the obscene side. $700 billion military budget is more than the next 10 largest militaries combined and represents 30% of global military spending. There's one country. And if you feel a little partisan, you might think, well, those sneaky Republicans, they got it through. But actually, the vote was 89 or 90, something like that, four. And both of our senators voted for this huge military increase, as did most Democratic senators. So anyway, I'm going to say this out loud, so maybe I'll actually do it. I'm intending to call Patty Murray's office and Maria Cantwell's office and just say, why? You know, can you explain to me? I don't understand. When Bernie Sanders proposed universal free education, he was laughed off the block by the Democratic Party, and that would have costed about $48 billion. So this is almost twice, so a little less than twice that. So it's a tough world we're in. Very activating. Very confusing, you know. We don't know what to do. And would our doing something really make a difference anyway, you know? So it seems like it also helps us to stop. With a lot of support, to also have a practice that helps us to really feel to the bottom. And so this is the practice of Sesshin. I think it's not in lieu of whatever action we feel moved to take, but in support of action. Helps us to make action that's a little more grounded and a little more based on a feeling for life. A little less reactive and more responsive, I guess. So the word Sesshin doesn't exactly mean meditation retreat. There is a word, Zazen Kai, that we're using for Andrea's half-day sits, which there was one on Sunday. Anybody go? Nobody here. Zazen Kai means Zazen Day. So they could have called this like Zazen Week. I don't know what that would have been. Zazen something else. But instead it's called Sesshin, which is two characters together. The first is pronounced Setsu. And the second one is Shin. And when you glom them together, changes the pronunciation, like the most compound words. So Sesshin. Setsu means like to touch something, to feel something, to be in contact, to touch or be in contact with something. Shin is a word we hear a lot in our sutras. Makya Hanya Haramita Shin Gyo, same Shin. This is a character for heart or mind. So it's a practice of touching the heart-mind, being in contact, you know, being in contact with the heart-mind. And so it's a practice that can last from 1 to 7 or sometimes 8 or 10 days, where we're living together in some way, practicing Zazen and eating and walking and sleeping and living together. And so it's more than just a whole big pile of Zazen, although there's a fair bit of that. Not as much as you might think. I was going to like count up how many periods or hours, and it's like, you know, it's like way less than, you know, like you're awake like, I don't know, 16, 18 hours a day. It's way less than that. Maybe it's 8 hours or something like that. Maybe 7 hours of total Zazen, something like that. But it's Zazen alternating with walking meditation, Kinhin, with doing services like we just did, with meals that are also taken in a mindful way. And it's zazen in the context of silent, continuous practice. And there's something about being in silence with a shared intention with others that's a big, big part of it somehow. And I have no way of discerning, like I can't pull the threads apart, which aspect of Sesshin are like effective and which are cultural leftovers or something like that. We kind of receive this package, which we've of course modified a little bit to make it work, but we have no way of knowing, you know. Is the benefit from the zazen and the rest of it just enables you to stand that much zazen? Or is the benefit from the silence? Is the benefit from the ceremonies? Is the benefit from all of it together? Is the benefit from the breaks, so-called breaks in the schedule, which usually happen after the meal, where there's an hour or more or less of unstructured time. But the thing about it is, you have absolutely nothing to do. How often are we in a quiet place with absolutely nothing to do? Maybe that's the most important thing of the whole time, you know? You may, when you're there, think, well, why is this important? I'm just like collapsed in a heap, or I'm just going on a walk, like I'm just going on a walk, whatever. But maybe that is important too. A couple of things I thought about Sesshin, and then I want to hear what you think about Sesshin if you've had the opportunity to practice this way. One is that we're really good at going, and one going leads to the next going, leads to the next going. I think about it like a chain or interlocking loops or something, and by the end of the day, you're so exhausted from all this going. We have a lot of practice and training in going. We know how to go, you know, go, go, go. And we're skillful at it, and there's a lot of going that needs to happen. A lot of doing is needed. We need to somehow meet this world and take care of our life. But Sesshin is kind of an intensive practice in stopping. For one thing, there's nothing whatsoever you have to figure out or decide. This does not stop your brain from trying to figure things out and make lots of decisions. But there's nothing you actually do have to figure out or decide at Sesshin. It's all planned out. Your itinerary is planned. The meals are planned. You don't decide what to eat, when to eat, how much, you know. I guess you could decide a little bit how much to eat. Oh, that's a little bit limited by the format too. You know, you don't decide what show to watch or what book to read or whether you should call your friend, because if you do the form completely, you're not doing any of those things. The silence practice includes letting go of reading and talking and gadgets and all those kind of verbal interactions with others and with yourself. So and this is a little bit uncomfortable sometimes because we don't know how to stop. You know, like we literally don't know how to stop. And so we practice that, you know? We practice stopping. Another thing I love about Sesshin is it's a powerful sort of yoga on our preferences. Because we basically think our preferences are perfectly reasonable, you know, and well justified because we have good taste, or kitsch taste, or whatever kind of taste we have. But if we pay attention, I think we have to realize that our preferences in many cases run us a bit more than we like to admit. Sometimes preferences become so amplified that they become serious psychological problems that really limit people's lives too. Make us housebound or afraid of all kinds of things. I was working with somebody the other day with a spider phobia. I had no idea that spider phobias could be that powerful. This person had a PhD in psychology and very talented, very, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I found her like, this was not at the Sesshin, this was another time. I found her basically in tears because there was a great big spider in the bathroom sink, you know. Wow, that's powerful, you know. So that's a little difference, I suppose, in a preference, but it's all connected because it's the mind, right? It's the mind making decisions about what's okay, what's not okay, what we want, what we don't want. What's great about Sesshin is when it's a little quieter, we can see the preference as a preference. And there's sort of like less, I don't know how to say it, there's like less sort of room for the justifications. You can kind of see the justifications are just kind of that much more stuff, you know, that much more thought, Or maybe in regular life we're so busy we don't even notice the justifications, they're just kind of operating under the surface and we just run our preferences. So I'm pretty equanimous about food. I mean, I'm vegetarian, so it makes me a little uncomfortable to eat meat, but otherwise I'm pretty equanimous about food, you know. This is just a small example, but small examples are where we learn. But I really have a strong aversion to peanut butter. Especially peanut butter baked into stuff. Like, just like, yeah. And sooner or later in Sashin, there's a, to kind of cheer us up, they serve us tea and a little cookie in the afternoon. You know, like you're flagging. You're like, and then somebody shows up and gives you tea and a cookie. It's very nice. But sooner or later, in every Sashin, they serve peanut butter cookies. And I can never quite detect the peanut butter cookies before I ended up with them. They're unavoidable, these peanut butter cookies. So this time, I really, as I try to do every time, but I maybe made a little progress this time, I really tried to just tune in. Like, okay. Sometimes I just kind of hold my nose and just... And then, more tea, more tea. So this time, I really tried to pay attention and feel the feeling of eating this peanut butter cookie. And, you know, the aversion to the flavor was definitely there, which is kind of this sort of inner tension of some kind. But the chewiness of the cookie was no different from any other cookie, and that's very pleasant, you know. And the kind of mealiness of the flour and the nuts or whatever was in there. And just the satisfyingness of, like, chewing, you know. Like, chewing is so satisfying, you know. It's just like, I don't know, it feels like we're in contact with something that's nourishing us or something. So, but what's so great about Sashin is, all kinds of preferences arise, and in that context, it's more possible to notice a preference as a preference, you know, and to study the inner dynamics of a preference, the thoughts and emotions and feelings in the body that arise. Because, you know, the real goal here is not just to, like, have a nice little tool so we're calmer and a little happier. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. If that's your goal, go forth. That's good. But the real goal of this practice is actually freedom. And freedom for what? Freedom to help. Freedom to live a life of service, connection, and love. And preferences shut down our freedom and make it harder for us to be connected, loving beings. So yeah, preferences come up like crazy sometimes for people. I really don't like the way she's walking. It's like, why is she walking that way? That's so arrogant. And connected to preferences are projections, of course. So this is great. We can see our projections so clearly because there's little ways with our social talking that we're constantly sort of readjusting our projections so that we think that they're accurate. And without the talking, the projection has lots of room to develop, you know, and build until eventually it's demolished, you know, by reality. And so you can see the way you're projecting all kinds of stories on other people. And people fall madly in love with each other and madly in hate with each other. And then your love object says one word at the end of the sashin. One word, and the whole thing just is crashing down. He's not what I thought he was at all. So this is also a very powerful quality of mind. It seems to be a quality of mind that we need. We need some way that we make sense of reality, and we're always making sense of reality based on very small bits of information. And our view of reality is never quite right. But we don't see it, right? Because we're so in the middle of it, and it's coming at us so fast, and we're constantly sort of adjusting and navigating. So sitting under your little cushion, staring at your neighbor for multiple days, you can see the mind making this stuff up. Sometimes you see the mind making it up, sometimes you believe it. And then eventually it's destroyed. So these are experiential trainings in how the mind works to help us with freedom. Help us with the subtle and infinitely complex and rich actual nature of this human life that we'll never quite know, you know. It's always richer and more subtle and more complicated than we can quite realize. And it's a very similar thing with planning and choice making. Like, our American ideal is, if I could just get to do whatever the hell I wanted, I'd be happy, right? And it's so distressing to people when the life circumstances are such that they get that and they're not happy, you know? So this is like, can we be free in the middle of the opposite of that? Free in the middle of not having any choices? And it turns out that you can. You can really feel that way. And this is really revealing, you know? Because if we can be free in the middle of a situation where we have no choices, what is it that we think can actually bind us, you know? What is it that we can think could take away our freedom? And I think maybe a couple of weeks ago or sometime, we were talking about compassion. I mean, that was another group, I don't know. But I always think, when I say that, I always think about the amazing stories. And there are many of these stories of Tibetan practitioners who were locked up and, in some cases, tortured by the Chinese. The Chinese soldiers, you know, who had been ordered to do this stuff. And in many time, these practitioners somehow retained this sense of freedom, didn't demonize their captors. And of course, there's famous examples of this through all kinds of horrible imprisonments and holocausts, and Nelson Mandela for his 18 or 19 years or whatever it was in Robben Island, you know, never giving up on his captors, you know, always being kind to them. So there's a way that we can learn about freedom that's not contingent on getting what we want. And Sachin, thankfully, you know, is more gentle than being locked up and tortured. But it seems like a lesson humans really need to learn, and I don't know of any other way really to learn it. That our ideas about freedom are a little upside down. And there's a lot of implications to how we live and how our economy runs and our political system, and lots of problems from that. Another thing, and all this stuff happens week to week here as well, but it's more concentrated, you know, it's more clear at Sachin if we get to do this for a day or 3 days or a week or something. This next one is pretty clear here, so this one's more portable, I guess, which is the great learning that comes from when they assign you to a job, like you're ringing the bells or something like that. And maybe it feels more loaded at Sachin because it's Sachin. And you're sitting there in front of your bell and you get some amount of training, probably not enough, you know, some small amount of training, and you're expected to hit it at the right time, in the right way, with the right spirit, with the right understanding, and the right. And you can watch your perfectionism and fear and embarrassment and shame and deep, you know, deep stuff. And of course, it's always a little bit funny for the organizers who are like, I just wanted you to ring the bell, really, I didn't, you know. Not intending to activate your deep shame, you know. You just need a bell, you know. People need to know it's time to, you know.
You need some shame.
Yeah, we need some shame. But that's just how it works, you know. We're not in control of all this. And somehow the service positions, these, you know, different jobs that we do at Sachin can be a rich training and all that. Or maybe your conditioning's otherwise and you're need to learn more about, like, sort of overconfidence or arrogance, or you say, well, I know how to do this, you know. And then they tell you, no, please don't do it that way. And you get in a big fight with them or something. Right? You know? It's just a bell, right? But one of the great things I always have said about religion, which is the same as sports, I guess, I was big on sports metaphors this last week at Sachin, because I misheard the Eno the first night. So then I studied this all week. He was, the Eno was Ewan, you know, Ewan McGee. And he was, you know, he was kind of in his calm Sachin mode, so he wasn't speaking that clearly, actually. And he said, well, and another sport we have is the schedule. But actually what he said was support. But I heard sport. So I thought, oh, that's right, this is a sport. We have, you know, we're all on the team and we're in the field and we've got a job to do together, and we want to perform well, and we have coaches, you know, and yeah.
Competition.
Yeah, it's a competition. She's doing it better than me. Oh, I know I shouldn't feel that way, you know. she's a worthy athlete, I should just support her, you know. So anyway, I was on sports all week, and so anyway, so like sports, we take these things so seriously, you know. And it's all made up, you know, it's all made up human stuff. The rules are agreed upon, I suppose, but also somewhat arbitrary and subject to change. So we get upset about things that don't matter, which helps us to understand what being upset is and what matters. So I think that's really important too, and Sesshin is such a great way to see that, and you can see it week to week in our practice just as well, I think. Another thing I love about Sesshin is it also, so we project on other people, but we also project on ourselves. And we have all kinds of theories about how we work, you know. And usually they're pretty simple theories with sort of linear relationships between variables. And like one I thought of is the relationship between sleep and energy. We think X hours of sleep equals Y joules of energy or something like that, right? And a lot of times people don't, at first at least, sleep that great at Sesshin. People are nodding. And then you make this huge suffering in the middle of the night because you are so convinced that tomorrow is going to be awful, the worst day of your life. And it's going to be embarrassing, but you're probably going to fail at Sesshin and have to leave because, you know, it's 2 a.m. and you're not sleeping and your mind is predicting all this based on your simple theory about energy and sleep. And then, to your weird amazement, the next day goes kind of fine. And then you actually sleep okay. And the day after that, you're miserably tired all day. Mm-hmm. So it's just like it reveals in the stillness and in the quiet, it reveals that we're a lot more complicated and unpredictable, and there must be other factors that we're not understanding. You know, of course, you know, we have great teachings on karma and cause and effect, so it must all be because of cause and effect, I guess, but maybe we can't perceive what all the causes are, you know, because we are confused by the effects. So, you know, with emotions, with energy, with all kinds of stuff, with the body. Oh, it's really true with the body. You know, we think, I could sit for 2 periods on a Wednesday night, 3 or 4, maybe. 7 to 8 will be painful. 14 to 22 will be extremely painful. By 27, I'm in the hospital. You know, right? You know, linear. And it doesn't seem to go that way. I mean, it can be uncomfortable, and maybe sometimes there is pain. And, you know, I don't mean to belittle anyone who has serious physical conditions. It can be hard to sit. But it's not as simple as that, you know? And people sometimes go through phases where there's a ton of pain, and they get frustrated and upset, and then you just kind of can't take it anymore, and then eventually something releases or relaxes or changes. Pain all goes away suddenly. What? Yeah. Or it changes, or it shifts, and we start to see the subtle and not so subtle ways that our attitudes and our frame of mind and our emotions and our history are also factors. It's not just like physical mechanics, you know. Because I have a scoliosis of 6 degrees, you know, I'm going to be this much pain in this many hours. It just helps us see that life is so much more rich and complicated and non-understandable. We quite realize, which on a good day makes us a little more open-minded, you know, a little more humble, a little more curious. Come on, I wonder what's going to happen next, you know? And wouldn't it be nice to live with a little curiosity and humility and open-mindedness? Not throwing away our wisdom or our understanding or, you know, our hard-fought knowledge of who we are and what we're about. You know, it's not wrong exactly what we think about ourselves. But, you know, if you look carefully, and Sesshin sets up situations where you cannot help but look carefully, you know, can't avoid it, you say, well, but all those theories about me are not exactly right either, you know. It's some of both here, some of both. Well, why would you do all this? Just to learn all this, you know? Surely there's, like, easier ways to learn all this. Well, maybe, maybe not. Another huge, huge benefit of Sesshin, I think, which is pretty subtle, is it shows us that there's deep healing just in the stopping, just in the stopping, just in Zazen and zazen in this context. Because you would think we would have like some yoga, because it would be easier, you know, it would feel good. And it probably would. But I don't know if I can quite say this clearly. There's something about just stopping and that's it, something this simple, where you're astounded by the end that you usually, not always, feel really good. You feel like, wow, there's been a lot of benefit. I feel light. I feel more myself. I feel grounded. I feel at ease. And all I did was sit there. How could this be, you know? So it helps to unhook a little bit our striving around improvement. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. It's a sort of radical not improving anything. You're not doing anything. And yet, there's improvement, growth, and healing. So it might be still smart to have a yoga period. Maybe one day we'll have that. But there's something, you know what I mean? I mean, there's something about it. They say, oh, it's the yoga. The yoga made me feel good. Okay, now I can stand the zazen. But there's something about just straight up, you know, where it's difficult, it's easy, it's hard, it's not, and it's everything, you know, if we pay attention. It's not any one thing. And yet there's benefit. Even though we didn't figure it out, we didn't fine-tune it, it's like a non-optimization. It's like a kind of a freedom from optimization, improvement, and clever management and curricula, you know. You can imagine a much better, you know, curricula than this. You know? It's a non-curricula. So I guess what I'm saying is what's great about our way of practice in the end is that it's a sort of non-way, you know. It's a non-method, a non-technique. And it's very strangely, over time, that's deeply healing. So what do you think? We've got, not much time left, excuse me. But what do you think is beneficial? Why does Sesshin help us? If somebody in this room had never done this before and is now completely terrified, what would you say? Why is Sesshin beneficial? Or how? In what way?
I don't know if this direct answer to that question, but it sort of does. Of course there's change, everything changes, but I think there's also a pattern that during Sesshin there's a tendency for stillness to build, to accumulate.
Yeah.
And you were saying how, you know, maybe the most important part is the breaks as well. You know, maybe also the most important part is the few days later after Sesshin.
Mm. When you still, you have some contact with that
carrying
stillness.
Carrying some of that stillness that's accumulated.
Yeah. The other thing I love about Sesshin a lot is it's really supportive of direct perception. And this is available to us all the time. But we don't really see or hear stuff, you know, because we're so busy thinking about it, you know, or thinking about something else. And yeah, and that stillness that Talis is talking about, sometimes you just see a tree, you know, or a flower or somebody else sitting there. And you suddenly realize, in a deeply felt way, that is unbelievable. That is amazing. That is so beautiful. It's beyond what I could ever even describe. And then you start thinking about it and it stops feeling that way. But but you know what I mean? And this is available all the time. You walk around, you see beauty everywhere if you pay attention. But it's more available, I think, in Sesshin. But yeah, that's a good point about stillness. Yeah, Ken.
I found I was there this weekend at least, and I got there very early because I was terrified of missing the ferry and getting there late, and I got there just after Jeff and one other person showed up and was there for helping set up, and we were all chatting and talking, and it was loose, and then we stopped talking and the projections all paraded in immediately. It's just, I mean, people that I got to know reasonably while setting up became different people the minute they
in the silence they were different.
Yeah, as soon as the silence came was one observation. Another observation, I think that just Sesshin's very slippery. You you think you have something and then you turn around and where'd that go? And, you know, that there's a moment of oh, then 2 minutes later it's like, what was that? What was the, oh, well, it to me, it's like I have it for a minute and I think, oh, this is great, I've finally figured something out, and then it's gone.
And maybe something there about the way the mind wants to
kind
of grab onto things, right?
Yeah.
Or figure things out, yeah.
And I do love the peanut butter cookies, by the way.
Yeah. You can have mine. Okay, and Chris.
This is a little weird, but...
Weird is good, we like weird.
I've noticed a couple of times after Seishin, when I'm back, you know, going to the grocery store, or used to be walking across campus or something like that, I find that people smiled at me more than ever. And I never knew why, but it was true. I got a different reaction from people and a more positive reaction from people.
That makes sense to me.
Than I generally do at other times.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense to me.
Do you think you were just noticing it better?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, or both, you know.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think there were people were responding to me a little bit differently.
Yeah, and if you look around at people at the beginning and the end of Seishin, you know, they're sort of there's a something, you know.
Maybe it's a peacefulness that
I peacefulness and kind of a glow of some kind, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, Chris. That's what I believe you.
I go into Seishin, and this isn't to make it sound more scary, but I go into it like it's sort of Zazen 24/7.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, you know, Orioki is eating Zazen and...
Yeah.
Breaks Zazen and sleeping Zazen.
Yeah.
And so when my sitting, I'm having a hard time during my sitting, I find that the non-sitting Zazen helps break through whatever impasse I've got. So I can come back to like afternoon Zazen and I'm in a different place than I was in morning Zazen.
Yeah.
Just from, and the silence and the no social interaction. That frame, that container that we create is just sort of so essential to that.
And the other thing I guess to say about the continuous zazen is it it also teaches us something about a sort of a sustainable effort, you know, a gentle effort that you can just keep going and keep going and keep going. So, and that seems like the only way to learn that is experientially, you know. You can't try too hard for that long, you know.
Yeah, well, I can be trying so bloody hard on the cushion, but then it's like,
yeah.
Just ease up the rest
eventually
of the time.
Eventually you ease up, Chris.
What terrified me before my first Seishin was that it was silent because I like talking. And the thought of being not talking for a week was just really strange. Why do people do that? And I was totally astounded to realize how much our day-to-day social interactions, how much that is actually draining, how much energy it takes to meet everybody fully every day. Mm-hmm. And you never know if someone is going to address you and whether you need to respond. And I could just drop that because I knew. At one point, I remember I wanted to turn to someone, isn't this sunset so stunning?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that person was standing next to me and just like staring out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need to say it.
You realize that that's just interrupting them, you know?
to realize how much we share in common intention and joint. Pleasure of being alive—that was just pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, it also kind of shows you there's so many different kinds of silence, you know. And some of us may have been socialized even at a young age to a sort of aversive silence, like a scorning kind of silence. And so this is an interesting way that we can kind of rediscover a kind of a companionable silence together, like Chris is talking about. No need to say anything. Yeah, why would you say anything? You know. Yeah, it's so clear. We're together and connected in the silence. Can you say something?
Yeah, I was thinking about what Alice said and about the contacting heart mind, and I just recall this story of, when I was driving back from Samish 3 years ago. You know, you're not checking your phone, and I checked my phone. my mom said to call, and I called, and found out my grandpa passed away.
Wow.
On the drive back, we're just leaving. And so I felt like, I mean, nothing spectacular here to say about it, but other than just, I felt very open and able to feel what I had to feel about that and talk to my grandma and hear how she was feeling. And I remember breaking into tears just because I realized that she'll be okay.
Mm.
That's how I felt talking to her. But a certain amount of sensitivity, and you think maybe getting news like that after a sesshin, you would just like go to pieces or something. But it was actually felt quite strong facing that news.
Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah, thank you.
I think, you know, we always talk about the triple gem, and you know, where can you better find sangha than at sesshin? And we're all together. And to be that, to be in a body like that for a week, it's pretty powerful, I think. We're just all in it together.
Yeah.
Terrible. I agree with that as well. That it feels like, even though we're silent the entire time, it really feels like we're strengthening our community. And probably the most powerful thing that I come away with is the interaction where you meet somebody on the path and you both stop and you go to the hop. And that's just such an amazing thing, amazing moment that you're sharing with that person. And you know, I really feel like it's just a lot of love that gets generated, you know, in the time together.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we're interacting. Yeah, it's just interacting in a different sort of way. Yeah, you're not isolated,
Well, kind of
Kate, last one.
In that vein, there was a fellow there that I did a little work with, you know. I was also at Indianola, anyway, this weekend. And then I got on the ferry and I saw his van. And it was like, oh, you know, it's like that we had this deep relationship or something. We just, you know, interacted for, I don't know, you know, minutes at the sesshin, but it was like there's just somehow this tremendous bond develops. And the other thing is, I'm one of those people Tim talks about that doesn't sleep at night at sesshin, and I do. I'm, you know, it gets to be 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm going, oh my God, this is terrible. I'm going to be so miserable. So this sesshin, I thought, I'm really going to see how I really feel throughout the day. So, yeah, I was awake, and then I was just watching through the day, and it was kind of this sort of, you know, it really was not miserable. It's this pleasant, dreamy sort of state. And then by the evening, it's pretty trippy, really, you know. Sometimes I hallucinate a little bit, but it really was not miserable. So I have to keep that in mind all the time. And I don't know. I don't know that I could see any. I always leave sesshin in a very joyous state, no matter how miserable I think I am when I'm not sleeping. It never ever fails. And in the middle of a sesshin, I might think, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. I'm just too wiped out. But always I end in that way, and I don't know what the cause and effect is. I don't know what piece of sesshin actually does it, or if it's the whole composite, but it always ends up that way.
Well, that's a nice last night. Who would have thought just sitting there quietly would be a joyful thing? Yeah.